Blog Talk Radio.
Matrix, 923, I'll give you a corrected address, but you have a fire in a one-story, ordinary, looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. Get your traffic control, squad 5. And go to 273-273.
Welcome, this is Mark Lamplew, and you're listening to another episode of Firefighter Wellness Radio on Fire Engineering Blog Talk. We get a pretty special guest for you tonight. His name is Rick George, and he just completed a 24-year career with Palm Beach County Fire Rescue. He's a nationally and state certified instructor, teaching his department for over 14 years. He's developed a few lectures and hot classes nationally. I know he pretty much taught at almost all 50 states, I think it looks like here. Several of the conferences, he's developed a few trainings that draw national interest, impact this, forcing impact resistant openings. And the one I think really which kind of got him, piqued my interest in Rick, and I've known him for several years now, is the monster and courage within developing and teaching resiliency. So, Rick, thanks for coming on the show tonight. I'll welcome you.
Thanks for having me, Mark. That was quite an intro, bro. 50 states? I might be wanted in more states than I've taught in.
Well, you've been all over the country teaching. I guess that's pretty safe to assume, right?
The fire service has been very, very kind to me, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like I said, I think the last time I saw you, you were working. I came up to your station. I was doing a project, and you were, you know, pretty much put your hand out right away and said, yeah, whatever I can do to help.
Yeah.
But you really have gotten into resiliency and teaching that. Explain, if you had to explain in a paragraph or to the listeners exactly what resiliency is and what it means to firefighters.
Sure. Before I do that, let me explain something. When you came up to the firehouse and I put your hand out like that, that firehouse is Station 33. It's in the center of the county in Palm Beach County. It's known as a fire factory. And they have some hard-hitting boys that work there. And you know what? Anybody that walks into that firehouse is treated the exact same way. Whether you've worked in the fire service or you're currently active in the fire service or you're retired or you've never been involved in the fire service, we treat everybody like that. The hand goes out to everybody. We've done some incredible things out of that station. Some very, very special people work there. So with regards to resiliency, what was the question again, Mark?
If you had to, you know, if you had to explain it to somebody listening, they may not know what it is, or, you know, I know it's not something you could probably explain, and, you know, there's so much to it, but just your really brief synopsis of, you know, what resiliency mean to you?
Gotcha. So resiliency is what you learn so when you are stretched and you are pulled to your capacity, your ability to be able to come back to as close to whole as possible is determined by your level of resiliency.
Gotcha. Which, you know, every firefighter out there, you know, working 24-hour shifts and running calls all night, you know, how whole can you get, you know? And that's pretty much trying to maintain focus when you're unfocused. You know, is that kind of...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's an aspect of resiliency that we teach. It's actually, it's an aspect of resiliency and the learning process that's missed a great deal in the fire service.
Yeah.
So the resiliency that when... So meditation is one of the ways that you can develop resiliency. And it's one of the ways that's easy to increase the thickening of the gray matter of the brain And before you chuckle nuts all start laughing, it's actually scientifically vetted. The University of Massachusetts, meditation improves neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity is only improved as you age by exercising the brain. And when you exercise the brain, the neuroplasticity improvement allows you to create new neural pathways, which means that you can learn more effectively and develop new neural pathways. You can replace default reactions with new learned behavior.
Huh.
Makes sense?
Now, what made you get involved with this particular topic? Did you know it? What drew you to this, and what drew you to trying to teach other firefighters this?
Well, that's a kind of a long story. So, sit back and relax. Relax for a little bit. Been in the fire service probably, I don't know, about 15, 13 years. It was 13 years, 14 years. And I was going through a divorce. And I have experienced some things in the fire service. That's just with Palm Beach County. I had been in there that long. And I had a couple 3-4 years outside of Palm Beach County before I got hired with them. So this divorce was the vehicle for my PTSD to come out. Now, I've said that a million times, and the reality of it is that it had always been showing up. I just couldn't recognize it, dude. I just thought that's the way marriage was. You know, you bitched at each other, you argued, you fought, you know. They run up the credit cards. We pay them off. I work 2-3 jobs. She works a job. Then she stays home with the kids. She yells at me, tells me that she works too, and that, you know, her job's as hard as mine. And, you know, all these battles, and it gets to the point where she doesn't want to hear anything about my career and my job. And almost a jealousy developed, which ends up in this divorce that kind of caught me by surprise. That divorce, even with all that insanity that I was describing to you, there was a point in time where her and I were in love with each other. At least I think so, and that's all that really matters, right? We had 3 kids and lived in a beautiful house. Had a house out of state, a little cabin up in the mountains, vehicles to drive. I was getting better and better at my craft. I had started teaching. I've been teaching several years, and developed a class for impact-resistant openings. It was a brand new technology coming out at the time, so things were really starting to take off. And it was everything was going well, right? Well, what happened when she said she wants a divorce? And this is why I say that it's the vehicle. Even with all that insanity, that relationship, being able to come home and have her, my kids, and all that, that safety, that security, that thing that I associated with love and my solitude, you know, that was my fortress of solitude, like, you know. And when she, you know, filed for divorce, and my attorney, he advised me that I needed to move out. And I'm not trying to rock the boat or anything, because I'm not a little guy. I'm not the biggest guy either. But, you know, I'm like right in the groove. And she's this little tiny thing. And so she is creating more problems by saying she's in fear for her life. I believe in her mind she thought that. There was never any domestic violence. There was never a hand raised. There was never anything like that. But no police reports, no, you know. She had called the police at one occasion because I was in a tirade of screaming and yelling. I probably would have called the cops on myself. And if you're out there in podcast land and can't relate, it just means you ain't been in the fire service long enough. stick around. It's coming. You know, if you can't hear the thunder, you're going to get hit by the lightning, you know? So the thunder was my voice screaming and yelling, and things probably over time may have escalated had I not gotten the help that I needed. So I moved out, and when I moved out, that's when all hell hit the fan. I couldn't sleep through the night. I was getting up at like between 2:30 and 3:30 in the morning. I'd stay up late purposefully, try to sleep through the night. I couldn't watch certain shows that we used to watch on TV as a family. So we used to watch this show on television called Extreme Home Makeover, where they'd come up to families who'd been hit with catastrophic incidents or something horrible had happened, or a family that was deserving better treatment than the position that they were in due to circumstance. And so they would come in and they'd do this huge, you know, turnover and all this, and they build them this beautiful home. I couldn't watch that show anymore because it reminded me of my family. And now my kids aren't allowed to see me until we go to court to remove this restraining order. And you know, my anxiety level has gone through the roof. On top of that, I just finished being, they did an extreme home makeover in Riviera Beach. And we were part of it. So I actually participated in the show, and it just reminded me of everything that was good. And all of that stuff that I was telling you about having that safety and the love and all that, and the kids and all that, now it's gone. It's all been turned upside down. So I don't have that anymore. What I thought once was no longer is. And the thoughts of suicide, the anxiety started, the issues with rage started happening. And during this period of time, when I was going through this, I think I had probably 14, 15 years sober. I quit drinking a long time, but we'll talk about that later. But so I didn't have drugs to fall back on. I didn't have alcohol to fall back on. I didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
And I was not interested in, you know, chasing women. And it was just, I was hurt, man. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. So it was all quite by accident that I was diagnosed. I happened to be in a session with my children in a, you know, we have an EAP program. Thank God for the employee assistance program that Palm Beach County had, because I was seeing a guy who was, he's a godsend. A guy's written a book on September 11th and the divorce rate, how it's accelerated exponentially as a result of September 11th and his documentation. So he had experience working with first responders, and he got me right away, and he pegged me, boy, I need to talk to you one-on-one. I was like, man, sure. I thought he's going to give me some insight, because in this battle, the whole time, I'm thinking, you know what? My wife at that time, my ex-wife, she's not making this up. There's something's wrong with me. I'm missing it. How could I be so dumb? And I must really be, excuse my language, fucked up if I can't even see what she's accusing me. Why would she lie? You know, I've been with her for 16 years. Why would she lie? We got three children. We got a great life. And so I had them. The reason for the EAP was because I needed an objective third party to evaluate what was going on, to see if I really was a danger to my children and her. And I mean, this is where I'm at. I don't know. I can't trust myself. I have, this was probably one of the most emasculating times of my life, because with the anxiety, I can't even keep my mask on my face. So now my career is in jeopardy. I'm trying to hide this from everybody. And I'm going through all of this, and I'm thinking about killing myself. That, before I would even reach out for help, I'd put a gun to my head and do me.
Yeah.
Rather than risk being ostracized and telling people.
Mm-hmm.
So this psychologist on this meeting where I thought he was going to give me some insight, he goes, he starts asking me about work. He starts asking me things like, so how was your shift? And I was kind of puzzled at that point. And I'm looking at this guy. I said, my shift was okay. It's a busy shift. I mean, I'm busy house, man. It's a hot house, and it's busy, and we run a lot of medical calls. We run fire. We run car accidents. We run the entire gambit. And when we run, we run. I mean, it is nothing to run 5-8 calls after midnight. That is not unusual at our firehouse. After midnight, you're just, you know, by that time, you're already shot out from the day. So the sleep deprivation aspect is it plays a huge role in it. Regardless, he continues on and starts asking me, so did you run any bad calls? I kind of cocked my head like that RCA dog on that old commercial. Remember, he's listening to the old Motorola, you know, commercial. If you're a younger kid, like younger than 50, you may not get this, but it doesn't matter. It's you've heard dogs when they hear the, they kind of turn their head. I looked at him like that, and I'm thinking, what is this guy getting at? And I'm looking, he's got his legs crossed in a way that men shouldn't be able to cross their legs. He's got a perfect manicure, and he's just scribbling away on this notepad. And I'm thinking, this guy, you know what he wants to hear? He wants to hear about the nasty, gory shit. And so I told him a couple of calls that we ran that were kind of ugly. And he went on and he said, so what did it smell like? And I said, pardon me? He said, did it have any particular smells? And I said, yeah. I'm kind of puzzled. Nobody's ever asked me that. What did it smell like? What did it sound like? Did you have any particular taste in your mouth? What did you hear? And I'm like, God, this guy, you're a glutton for punishment. Bro, you want to know how dark my world is? You want to know? Well, welcome. Come on in. Because the pool is deep. I got room for you. And I blasted him. I just gave him the... I gave him what he wanted to hear. I told him the truth. And I said it with the vindictiveness that I wanted to hurt him the way I was hurting. And it didn't stop there. It went from one call to the other, to the other. And I hit him right between the eyes with about 5 or 7 calls. And I will never forget that to this day, when I think about them like I do now, I get emotional. But the difference is they used to haunt me. They don't haunt me anymore. But it's okay to be sad when you recall those things because they're fucking tragic, man. You're supposed to be sad.
Yeah.
You know? But you're not supposed to hold on to them and ruminate on them and use them to hurt yourself. So anyways, the guy at the end calms me down. I think he got a little freaked out because I got veins in my neck and my forehead sticking out, and I'm leaning forward in my chair. I think I broke his chair because I banged on it a couple of times with my fists on the armrest, and I kind of kicked the ottoman, the little ottoman that he had me relaxing my feet on. He's trying to make me comfortable, you know. I kicked that thing across the room, knocked over a bunch of shit in the corner, and he kind of sat back. He's like, all right, calm down. Let me explain something to you. And that's when he tells me, he says, you, Mr. George, you have PTSD. And I looked at him and I thought, oh, this guy has got feathers and webbed feet because he is clearly a quack. Because I have never been to war. PTSD is for military folk, for veterans who've come back and have seen and done horrific stuff. I did not equate what I had been through to that level. Those guys are heroes. Those guys are on a completely different level. You can't put me in that level with them. And he said, no. He said, I agree with you, but you still have PTSD. And so he began to explain it. And I'll be honest with you, I was crying like a little bitch, man. I was crying so hard and sniffling and it was disgusting. I had freaking snot coming out of my nose. Like, I almost had to kill him so that he couldn't tell anybody else what he had just witnessed me do. You know, and I was But that's my level of pride, you know, because I'm so scared. At that point in time in my life, I was so scared that somebody would see me that vulnerable. Because the way I grew up, you didn't show that, bro. You got run over. You got taken advantage of if you showed that. I didn't come from an inner city, but I've seen some things. I've done some things not proud of. And so he's explaining this, and I'm kind of torn between joy and sadness because he's giving me an explanation as to why I'm experiencing the things that I have. I said, why can I not sleep? Why do I keep seeing these faces?
Yeah.
Why do I keep going through this? And he told me, he goes, you're not going to like this. And I looked at him right in the eyes. I said, I'm not liking any of this so far, so why should this be any different? Why? And he said, see, you're normal. This is a side effect. This is post-traumatic stress disorder. He says, so now what we have to do is create order to your disorder. So he does a form of neurofeedback and cognitive therapy that we did along with some exposure therapy, which really fucking sucks. 8 months of this, and I was a basket case. I did buy into it, and I'll tell you why. Because I'd been sober for this long, and I knew that I had, I know the difference between vice and virtue. I know the difference between a character defect and having character. I know what morality is. I know what all of these things are. It's part of my journey in sobriety, right? So I get what he's telling me. While I may not clearly understand it, the truth resonates when I hear it, and I heard it. And so it kind of fell short because I was still having the problems and going to work, and it just was getting worse, bro. I was training like an animal, Mark. I was about 205, 210 pounds in there somewhere. I was maybe 5-6% body fat, and where I could lift a train and I could run for miles. I was in the best shape of my adult life.
But inside, it's almost like maybe you were trying to project that.
Yeah, listen, it wasn't helping. The harder I trained, the worse it got. It being the anxiety, and I couldn't keep my mask on. And it just baffled me, because with me, any time that I couldn't accomplish anything, I just worked harder at it, and it falls into place. That's it. I developed a work ethic from my parents watching them, you know, they're immigrants, and I saw the work ethic, and that was just ingrained in me. So, but it wasn't working. It had the opposite effect. And so that led me on a whole nother journey. But that's when the resiliency part started, and I started doing these techniques and developing some things, and that turned into a class, and that class turned into why I'm on this interview.
that's a powerful story, and I think in doing the stuff I do, I see many people that are at that point of where you were and didn't know, you know, and just were grasping for things. And a lot of times, you know, grasping for the alcohol or that self-medication to feel better than trying to get them away from that. And then they're kind of like in this world of basket case because all these emotions are coming. They don't know why, and trying to restore their sanity, which, you know, as you know.
Yeah.
It's a process.
Yeah.
You know, they want it right away. We want to get better immediately, you know. Oftentimes it's a process. And I remember, I'm going to probably spill the beans here a little bit, but back in 2010, when I came to Florida, I seen you I heard your message, so to speak, in a church in Deerfield, and that's pretty much all I'll say. And that guy, that was almost 8 years ago now. So I remembered you from before. Yeah. And it was an inspiration when I heard it then. But, you know, I'm always curious about this, since I see a lot of guys that get sober and they're firefighters and stuff like that from the work that I do and myself. Do you think you would have still had those issues if you weren't a firefighter? Or do you think that was the job a contributing factor? Or do you think you would have been that way as regardless of what you did? Were you, you know?
That's a really good question. So that requires an understanding of some things. Let me create a baseline for you. So the research, and I would quote the doctor, but I don't want to. You know what? I will. Let me find it. I think it's right here. This guy, I think, is the one. Yes. What is your name, mister? Where are you at, boy? There's these two doctors that wrote this this research that I'm looking at now, and it's called The Neurobiology of Feeling Safe by Dr. Stephen W. Porges, P-O-R-G-E-S, Porges. And it's not just him. You can Google this and you can research it yourself. So when you go through something traumatic, so the question is, was the job a contributing factor? Yes. Would I have had this problem later on? Here's the rub on that. I might have had this problem later on, but the explanation would not have made itself so readily available. It would have been a contributing factor that, oh, you're an alcoholic. Oh, you're a freaking drug addict. Oh, you got problems with your isms, you know, alcoholism and whatnot. And it would have been attributed to that, and it wasn't. So we'll back up to the death and stuff that I see at work. So that vehicle, my career path, brings me back to a time in my life where got several of my friends have been murdered, close friends. One of them was murdered in a home invasion, and he put up a great fight. JoJo was we used to call him the voodoo child, and JoJo put up a hell of a fight, man. He was fighting two assailants, and he was all geeked up too. And man, geeked up means he's just high on cocaine, and he lost a lot of weight. But the boy could fight. That's what we did when we were young. We fought, and we were good at it. And furniture was broken. All kinds of stuff was going on. And the third assailant was in the other room holding these people at gunpoint so that they could not intervene. It was a home invasion. And the irony of it is that's what we used to do with other drug dealers, except this time. It was happening to one of our boys in our crew. And so he started beating the one guy real good. And then what happened is he got pistol whipped. He was put down in a kneeling position. And he was executed. And so when they were done clearing the place, the police, after they released it back to his father, me and a couple other guys that were all close, we told them we need stuff out of here tonight. And his dad was like walking around in a daze. You could imagine, number one, walking into your son's apartment, seeing the frickin' dresser with like a white powder on it, the residue from just doing lines on top of it, and the pans. Back then we didn't make crack, we made base cocaine. And so there was a lot of this was, you know, right, the paraphernalia was there. And his dad was just shocked, and then the blood all over the floor. The hole in the wall, and it went through one wall into the other bedroom and into the closet is where they pushed him through the wall. He pushed the guy through the wall, and then the other guy grabbed him, pistol whipped him, threw him into the closet, broke the doors, all kinds of crap. You get an idea. I'm trying to describe the disarray that the apartment was in. and his and the impact, because I'm looking at his father, and his father's old Italian knucklehead. You know, he is nobody's pushover, and from back in the day in the city. And anyways, he's in a daze, and I told him, I said, man, we got to empty this place out, and they all agreed because we knew what was going to happen. Here's the lifestyle we led. We knew that the minute the word got out that he was dead and the place was released, people would be breaking in to steal the stereo equipment, the kitchen equipment, everything. They'd take everything. And so we emptied the apartment that night, and that following day the apartment came into. So this was the lifestyle that we were leading. Pat was shot in the chest at point blank range when he answered his door for a couple pounds of weed. Billy was thrown in front of a train. You know, at the time I didn't think about it much because I'm high. I'm not thinking about it. I'm allowing anger to fuel me. I'm young. I'm stupid. I'm wrapped up in drugs and alcohol, and I'm living in the underside of society, and I'm living a lifestyle that is the life expectancy isn't very long. So would that have come up? No, probably not the way it did in the fire service. And the fire service actually did me a favor, because now my association with death and watching man's inhumanity, get the relationship, man's inhumanity to man, and this and that, that's in my case. That's true. Now, what I'm getting back to is this, I have not lost my path. I'm getting back to the research of this Dr. Stephen Porges. So the ordinary person growing up being scared of the dark, okay, and now you come to the fire service, and you're struggling when you're doing blackout drills. And so now you're being ostracized because you suck at it, and you got to learn how to become better at it, you know, and or anything else. You were burned as a child, and now you're a fireman, and you're trying to overcome your fear of fire, and it doesn't even kick in until one day something triggers it. So underneath the surface, a lot like an iceberg, is what we call rumination, and that's the negative self-talk. So it's a very quiet voice at first until you become aware of it. And then you start to turn the volume up and you become more and more aware of what it is that you're telling yourself. Well, those things that I'm telling myself, if I tell myself that long enough, what it does is it changes me at a cellular level, my DNA. So if I live in the sympathetic nervous system and I have all of those normal reactions that come with living in fight or flight, then what happens is my life evolves differently, and I'm changed at the level of my DNA. So now when you have children, your children are predisposed to these types of behaviors and emotions. And so that's how deep this goes. And that's what the research shows, that it changes people and that it can be passed on from generation to generation. So my journey has been, how do I undo this? You know, how do I make this right? So I am a Christian, and I'm a Christian, and I go to a church where the pastor says, this is not a hotel for saints. This is a hospital for sinners. And thank God for that, because I am God's biggest sinner. I am a cheap sinner, and I am not. So when you hear the word Christian, you got to understand something. I come from a really, really ugly past, and where I'm at now, even though it's rough around the edges, is light years ahead of where I was, and it's not the end of where it is that I'm going. So you don't judge people. I've learned not to do that. I learned that through suicide. And what people did after this experience, I realized that what they're looking for is relief, you know, and that's a common misconception. Suicide doesn't give relief. It doesn't take the pain away. It just transfers it to some other people. You know, you're going to give that to your children, to your mother, your father, you know, your wife, your husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. brothers and sisters, and they carry this grief. And now they have these ideations of this, what suicide means, and the weakness and all this other stuff, and you start to create a belief. That belief now goes down to your DNA. You see how this happens? And the reason I brought up me being a Christian is because we believe in sins of the Father. Whoa, what do you say? Sins of the Father. And now when I look at it and I go, oh, my God, this stuff is transferable and my kids might have this. I met my wife when I was 1 year sober. I'm 30 years sober now. I've never relapsed. I picked up one white chip. For those of you that aren't not familiar with a 12-step program, poker chips symbolize you're getting sober and that you're gambling with your life. And it starts with a white one, which is the international symbol of surrender, that you're surrendering that type of life and you're surrendering yourself to God to hopefully guide you to a better way of life. Not a religious thing. And if you got issues with God, just listen to the story, okay? This ain't like the flu. You're not going to catch it just because I say it, okay? So save your judgments aside and enjoy the story. And that is where the research has opened up other doors. And so all of this stuff, while it's helped me heal immensely, it's helped me help other men heal. But we have developed this class, which is about performance, because the very techniques that are utilized for me to help heal are the same ones that are used in high-performance athletes, Olympians, professional athletes, extreme athletes. One of our subject matter experts is Dr. Andy Walsh. He's a performance director. He's the performance director for Red Bull, the drink. It gives you wings, you know. So the meditation aspect was very big for me to try to quiet my mind and grasp my thoughts and get a hold of things. And it's instrumental in sobriety, but it's extremely instrumental in performance. So much so that the United States Navy SEALs BUDS program has a mandatory mindful meditation for these guys to help be able to develop attention and focus. And these techniques are taught all over. Another one of our subject matter experts is with Virginia High Performance. And Nichols is he was with SEAL Team 6, and he's a really cool dude, man. Hell of an athlete too. Oof. This guy been blowed up, all kinds of other stuff, and the way he's come back, and the conversations that we've had, and the technology that's being utilized, that we have been privy to experiencing and trying, and contacted and. They wouldn't go as far as sponsoring, you know, us, when I say us, there's a couple of us that created a company called Tactical Resiliency Training. You can find us on Facebook. And so the performance aspect of this is another thing that I'm actually was going to let that loose when I do Fit to Fight Fire with John Spira again, the next episode. We've talked about that. But that's the training that you talked about when you opened about the courage within, the monster within. Those classes were developed because we had the technology and we knew we were utilizing things like biometrics, you know. Biometrics is where we actually suit you with like a shirt, an Under Armour shirt, and it's got a little receiving port under the armpit, and this little tiny computer plugs into that. Like a little saucer, like a disc, real small. It's the same, about as round as a poker chip, but it's a little bit thicker, maybe an eighth of an inch thick. And you sync it to the computer and you give it a number, and each individual's got a number, and we track your. There's a myriad of things that you can track, but we track five that we feel are important: maximum heart rate capacity, your heart rate variability, respiratory rate. And temperature. when we were training. And so this is a very technical piece of equipment, but we wanted to see if what we were doing really did translate. And we were blown away by the numbers that we're pulling back. So the number one killer of firemen is heart attack, right? Well, how often do people surpass their maximum heart rate capacity to work? How long can you perform when you're exceeding 100% of your capacity? So if your maximum heart rate capacity for functionality is at 170 beats per minute, 175 beats per minute, and you're working at 200 beats per minute, how long can you sustain that before A, the flux capacitor blows up, or B, you blow your load and you're exhausted and you can't do anything further from that point on? That gets a lot more technical and a lot more complicated at that point. So we started incorporating heart rate variability and that stuff to be able to predict and watch how guys can change their heart rate variability just by using breathing exercises. So heart rate variability was a predictor for us. So we started monitoring all that stuff. And then from there, things just blew up with neuroscience around the time that I was creating this class. So the neurofeedback that people were doing to be able to recognize how to develop the attention and the focus is the same way that you can develop it through meditation. But now with Dr. Bishop, and this is where I'm picking brains of Jeff Nichols and there's a couple of other guys that were there, Dallas Woods, and these are all guys that work in the mind gym for the Navy SEALs. And so they're talking about training and hyper training. And I'm thinking, yeah, we do that. And they burst my bubble when they're like, well, you know, it might be a little bit different. We firemen, man, we like to thump our chests and shit. We expend the same kind of energy that the military does. And that may be true. And you may think that you're really good at what you're doing. Okay. And you probably are. I know some freaking rock stars in the fire service that these guys, if I was trapped or if my house was on fire or if I had to work with them, I would love it. If these guys were on the job, they were doing it, they were coming to get me, or they were working my house or I was working with them on the same crew. They're phenomenal. But hyper training in their context is very different than ours. If you practice roof ventilation, 500 times in 1 year, just go to training 500 times, but let's say 300 times, that's almost once a day you're going to train. Okay. Hypertraining is the SEALs shoot more ammunition in 1 week training than the entire Marine Corps does in a year. In 1 week, they shoot more ammo than the Marine Corps does in a year.
So they're living and breathing. That's it. That's their life.
Exactly. So when I heard that, I now have a new context of how training is implemented. So this is where the mindfulness kicks in, and it develops into other aspects, which is, it just starts to get more and more technical from here. But then on top of that, with back to the neuroscience, so now they've got this thing, which is a neurostimulator. So if you're constantly accessing your brain and you're living in the sympathetic nervous system, which you may be sitting there, not you in particular, Mark, but anybody listening to this webcast may not quite understand that. Or if they do, they think that they're good. Well, check this out. Hypervigilance is what you need to have in order for you to be good at work. And you can take that to an extreme so you can be great at work, because you never know when those tones go off what call is going to drop. And you have to be prepared for anything, from pediatric to geriatric, from simple helping Mrs. Jones up the stairs or picking her up off the floor to a freaking commercial or a high-rise fire with victims trapped, an airplane accident, there's a myriad of things, from your run-of-the-mill Signal 4 and your room and contents fire, a pot on the stove, domestics, murders. It just goes on and on and on. And you never know what so you train. And you train. And you've screwed up on a call. And you swear that'll never happen again. Because that person might have lived had you been faster, had you been stronger, had you been better technique, had your tools been prepared properly, and on and on and on. And so now the rumination starts. And the hypervigilance of being prepared for everything. Guess what, boys and girls? You're not going to be prepared for every call. Doesn't happen because you're human. You're human. You may think that you're prepared, but the reality of it is that hypervigilance at some point doesn't shut off, and now you're constantly living there. And so when you think that you're doing well, right, and so what happens is the brain changes. The brain starts to change. Biochemically, your brain changes. There are sections of your brain that do not function and do not light up. And so the brain stimulation, the techniques that they have now and the equipment that they have now is just incredible, because now from a guy that's bugging out and wants to go AMA out of the treatment center that I'm working at, he wants to go AMA, they send him in, they go see neuro, he goes to neuro, you can leave right after neuro. Okay, fine, here, put this on, sit down, relax. They put some earphones in, play some music, and it's a very, very mild stimulation. What it does is it stimulates the parts of the brain that are shut down so that it can shift from the sympathetic to the parasympathetic. How's that for freaking making miracles happen? Holy crap.
Yeah.
And everything changes.
Yeah,
the affect changes. Rational thought process comes back, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I'm familiar with a lot of the treatment centers now, which is great, as they're finally getting into a lot of neurofeedback and stuff like that. One of the facilities that I worked with used it was called Brain Paint, same thing. Any AMAs, they would take them over there. Anybody that just wasn't feeling a lot of anxiety, stimulates the nervous system, the vibrations, hearing, and you can see it right on the screen. When you talked about meditation, it was when I that meditation saved my life. When I went to treat, I had my issues too, and I guess you could say trials and tribulations, and I can never a counselor saved my life by teaching me meditation. And at first I thought she was crazy. There ain't no way this is going to work. And I went to Reiki for 3 years every couple of days. I fell in love with it. It was great.
Yeah.
It felt so great. Kind of fell back off.
Meditation,
meditation saved my life.
It saved mine, too. It probably saved a lot of other people's lives, too, from me. I was a freaking lunatic. And that was before I got into the fire service. You know, somehow God blessed me and did not strike me with a felony charge of any sort, even after everything that I'd been through. And I kept that shit quiet, bro. I didn't say boo, but I'm retired now, so here's the unmasked version. You know, I was a bad man. I was a dangerous dude. You did not want to come across me when I was younger. I really didn't. I didn't care much. You know, and so I get it. And that's why I worked in the ghetto. I loved it, man. I get it. I knew exactly what they were talking about. I spoke that language, you know?
Yeah, he could be a role model for, the people. And, you know, when you're responding to calls, a lot of those people are kind of trapped in, and like you say, being passed on. You know, it's the same situation with the people in that lifestyle. It's kind of passed on by generation to generation, and you can almost be a role model to those to see that, you know, you can change and you can become this or that, and you don't have to live in that negativity.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We could talk to him at a different level. So I wanted to, I led on to that. I work at a treatment center now, and I wanted to plug that. It's a place called the Florida House Experience. It's in Deerfield. It's a 200-bed facility. State of the art. And people talk that shit all day long. The IAFF is pounding their chest about this treatment center. All they did was pass legislation amongst themselves and say, this is the place we're going to funnel our people to. And guess what? It's just another treatment center, you know? Just another treatment center, you know? And I'm not putting it down. You go for help where you go. But this place has a standalone building that they have dedicated, 16 beds, can sleep 32 people, just for first responders. So they've got the residential, they've got the intensive outpatient, you know.
And you have Ann there, right?
Yes. And Ann Wayman is the, she is the program designer and director for Shatterproof, is who I work for. I actually work for Florida House, but Ann is my boss. Shatterproof is the first responder program. All our clinicians, Ray McDaniel's another one, former military, Annie's Corrections, I'm fire service. They got a couple of other clinicians that have been working with first responders. So you got first responders working with first responders. And we deal with everybody from corrections.
I wish I would have known. I didn't know you were working there, Rick. I would have had you bring Ann on too.
Oh, God, yeah. She would have loved it. She would have loved it.
I
would have just listened to her. She's the specialist, man. That woman is she's special. She really is. She's a little tiny thing, you know. And I'll tell you what, boy, she pack a punch. The boys that she's got to deal with, you know, she doesn't pull no strings. And right now we got 27 guys in there from veterans, law enforcement, treasury, corrections, fire, EMS, dispatchers. We got them all. And we do. So not only do they get the cognitive behavioral therapy, but there's the biofeedback, the neurofeedback, and the neural stimulation. Nobody in the country, and I challenge anybody to find a place like this doing what we're doing right now. Nobody is. We just had people come in from a level of government that uses three initials they did their program for us, and I was hoping that we would learn something, and it was some cool stories and all that. You know how that is, Mark. But we are surpassing what they're doing. They finally did a tour after they did their 2-day presentation, and they were like, "Holy crap, you guys are like the tip of the spear, bro. This is tip of the spear shit right here, man. This is, and you know what? This tip of the spear is going to be common everyday stuff in the next 5 years. Everybody will be going towards this and funneling this. It's just the way of the future. It's the way air packs went, you know. It's the way hydraulics went on ladders rather than rigging and cables, you know. We move from ropes to straps. Everything is straps, you know. Our gear has gotten lighter and more efficient. Technology catches up. Well, guess what? Neuroscience has blown up. And here we are, and this program is incredible. I just sat in a group today. Today's Tuesday. My groups are on Tuesday, 1300 to 1400 to 1500 hours, and I got them for 2 hours, and we work them. And it's my program. It's the same program, but we've refined it more specifically for this. When we knew each other back at the Station House retreat, which was where Ann first started Shatterproof. And so that's defunct now. And these people called her and said, "We want your program, bring it in." So this is about to really get large. We're going to outgrow this facility very quickly.
You bring up a good point. It's something I want to bring up about Ann. There's a lot of, and you probably can relate to this a lot from yourself, you know, being sober for so long, and talking about clinicians that, you know, work with first responders. But I take a lot of people that call that need help or need a PTSD therapist local, and I hear a lot of them sometimes talk. Well, they don't understand first responders. And Ann's a perfect example. Is they don't necessarily have to be a first responder, but they have to get first responders. And Ann's the perfect example of that. She, and I know her as a clinician, and she's excellent. and there isn't a first responder that's going to sit in front of her and get over on anything, and she's going to call them out, and she's going to help them if they're open-minded to accept it.
Yeah, you're not going to surprise her. You're not going to shock her. She's not going to cry. She can empathize with you. She's not going to shed tears. She's going to know that your pain is your pain, and she's going to shift that. She's going to show you exactly what we do in our performance training, which is how to develop your fear and your weakness into your strength and show bravery through courage. And that's what we do, man. You know, and that's what I do with the performance aspect. And Annie's a perfect example of it. And we don't do just drugs and alcohol. It's drugs, alcohol, PTSD, anxiety, and behavioral disorders with first responders. Period. End of story. Whatever your problem is, prerequisite, you're a first responder. Ain't nobody sitting in that group that's not a first responder. And the beauty of it is, law enforcement may get it to a certain extent, but not to the extent that the fire does, because in the fire, we have the firehouse, you know, and there's three, four, five, six, and more of us in the same firehouse. Sometimes you house more than one company in a firehouse. And so it's a band of brothers. And that's what we developed there. And that band of brothers has a synergistic effect with your ability to be able to learn and trust the other guy. So when you make yourself vulnerable, the biggest fear is you're going to look like a pussy. Guys are going to freaking dress you down. What kind of man are you? You know what kind of man they are? They're the kind of man that's going to get better, become stronger, develop a mental toughness that is surpasses anything they have ever experienced in their life, and their ability to be able to come home, distinguish the differences between work and home, and provide a loving atmosphere so their family and their wives and their children and the rest of their immediate family can prosper and grow from.
Yeah.
You think it's tough being a fireman? Come to this program. Get your shit wired on right, and then go home and live happily ever after. That's tough. And that takes a training that you just can't even imagine. That's what these men are battling. And they're doing it leaning on each other. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing.
You got do you have a website?
I don't know if they got a website. They probably do. But
I'll find it. I'll put the link on it. If anybody's listening, you want to look for more information, I'll put the link on the I'll find it, put the link up on the show page.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Because I can tell you this. Here's a phone number for you, okay? 954-794-6863. 954-794-6863. And that goes to their main line. You tell them you're a first responder, you're looking for help, you're looking interested in taking a tour of the facility, whatever. Incredible. It is incredible. And it's not some little freaking rinky-dink place, bro. This is a very, very large facility. They got a six-story building. They got another one.
I met with Ann a few months. I guess that was maybe about a year ago. A few months after she got started down there and took a walk around. They got that new across the street, the big gym there. That it was pretty impressive. Where they had the gym and all that. The building across, that was very neat.
Yeah, they have they've got the gym there. They've got what else do they have there? They've got their own doctors there. Yeah, they have their own neuro lab. They have their own here it is, Florida House Experience. They've got their own lab. They've got Yeah, you type in Florida House Experience, and it'll pull up a number of things for you for drug and alcohol treatment. There is no first responder stuff on there, but pretty much www.floridahouseexperience.com, and that's where it takes you. It's actually FHE, F as in Frank, H as in Hollywood, E as in Experience, Rehab. Everybody knows how to spell rehab in the fire service, don't they? So FHERehab.com, and it'll take you to the website. But the only reason I'm plugging this place is because I have seen broken men become whole again. I've watched it. I've been a part of it. Nothing more fulfilling than that, helping a brother out like that. That shit brings tears to your eyes, make you feel invaluable. I mean, just like, you know, you're doing it again. So when I retired, there's a drop off. Yeah, you no longer have the firehouse to go to. You don't have the boys, you know. You go from being the man to being a man. And it's a very big difference. Nobody can prepare you for that until you experience it. It's a shocker. And anybody that's in the fire service, I would recommend that you have some form of career path or something to do, or a job or something that's fulfilling. Because here's a little secret. If your life is not purpose driven, you're just drifting, man.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have a purpose in life. Otherwise, drugs, alcohol, the thoughts of suicide, all that shit's going to run your life, man. It's going to run your life. You're going to go from one woman to another. And I know brothers are out there going, yeah, baby, I'm doing that now. Uh-huh. There's a very big difference. There's a very big difference between doing my will and God's will. My will may make me successful, but God's will fulfill me. And when you are your brother's keeper, or you are have a purpose in your life, trust me, it's fulfilling. It's very different than the temporary relief that you're looking for, you know, in other women, in drugs, or if you're a woman and other men, or if you're a man and other men, whatever. Ew. But the point is, you got. I didn't mean that like in a bad ew. It's just not my cup of tea. So you're gonna fall for something, man. You really are. You're gonna do something. You know, and just trust another brother, man. When you retire, have a plan. Have a plan. Keep purpose alive in your life, you know. Keep it alive in your life. My wife and I are doing some remodeling and stuff, and I know within the next year or two, we'll be a foster home. You know, I couldn't wait to get these kids out of my house. Now we're going to be foster parents. It's just crazy. But I love that. I have found what it is that fulfills me and helping other people. And it ain't about Rick. I'm going to tell you that right now. I ain't that fucking smart. That's just, God opens doors, and I'm smart enough to walk through them. That's all. That's all it takes. I don't deserve any of the stuff that I got. I was blessed. I don't deserve any of it. Trust me when I tell you, I was not a nice man. I was a bad man, and I did not get justice. I got mercy. Those life lessons have turned me from being a guy that would ruminate on that and have a negative outlook on it to a guy that embraces that and has leaned into his fears and seen what's on the other side. And I love that, man. I love that. I would not trade places with anybody in the world. I wouldn't, even with all my faults, man. Listen, my life ain't all that, okay? I got my good days and my bad days, all right? Now, I live in South Florida. I mean, with the exception of Honolulu, the traffic down here is just, or downtown Atlanta, good Lord, or L.A. or any of them places. The traffic is, it's insane. And I will every once in a while slip into a little bit of a rage, and fortunately my windows are up, and I just scream and yell and get it out of my system, and then laugh at myself and go, "You are a fucking retard." You know that? And I just let it out and then just move on. You know. But it
I'm there with you on that same thing.
Yeah, you feel my pain, man. So where do you want to go from here? Where do you want to go from here? What do you want to talk about?
I think we did good, man. I think we covered a lot. And your story is an inspiration, and we did good.
Well,
did your training got a website?
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook, Tactical Resiliency Training. We're just finishing up. As a matter of fact, we're on fire engineering. This is awesome. So we just finished up a book. And I think it's called Resiliency Training for the Modern Day Firefighter. That's a long ass title. And it came with a recommendation when the book, when the notes were sent out. We got some really, really good recommendations from some of the leaders in the fire service with regards to that fire engineering. I mean, Penwell does that. And so the deal is it's got to be a softback book. It's got to be affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be written in plain English. And, you know, it's one of those things that we would not balk on. We wanted it so guys could fold it up and write in it and read it and do whatever it is that they're going to do. That's, you know, keep it with, set it next to the toilet. You can read a chapter while you're taking a dump. You know, it's that kind of book. If I had it my way, I'd have it written in crayon, you know, because it's a book by firemen for firemen. And it's with regards to the resiliency. And we give you the referencing. We give you graphs. We give you details. We give you examples and explanations and stuff like that. And it's awesome. And so we were shooting for the deadline to get it to come out in at FDIC this year. But we were told that that's not going to happen. I mean, we're not happy about that. That was part of the deal. You know, the book comes out at FDIC because we think it's important. And I'm going to tell you right now, making money on this? Nah, I ain't making money. I may make a couple of dollars. I mean, I'll be shocked if I make $100 in a year on the book that we've written. That's not why we wrote it. And it's not why I teach it or it's not why I work at this rehab. It's not why I do things.
Mm-hmm.
I do things because they're important. You know, when we do our class.
Well, are you teaching at FDIC this year?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a workshop. Workshop is, when is it? Is it Monday, Tuesday? I think it's Tuesday. And Carpenter and I actually finally put us in at the same time. So let me see here. You know what? I don't even have it in here when I'm supposed to teach. I think it's Tuesday. And I'm on in the morning, and Bob Carpenter's class is on in the afternoon. And Bobby and I co-teach. So Bobby teaches a lot about the laws of adult learning. And I teach about the impact of high-performance training. And so we combine them. Uh-huh. And we do that's what our class is about when we do a class. It's a class called Victories Don't Happen by Accident. And we come into your department and we train your instructors. And we're there for 4 days. And we do a tabletop. We do a workshop the first day. And we do a couple tabletop scenarios. And then the second day, the students are developing their course. And then the third day, the half the class is teaching the first half. And then the first half teaches after lunch. They teach the second half. So the instructors are teaching each other, and then the fourth day we dial it in and we tell them what their strengths and their weaknesses were and what we were looking for. So the fire service is like under the concept that the harder you make a drill, the better you're going to be. That's a bunch of horse shit. If you make a drill and guys are dying in it, you're teaching them how to fail. This is success-based training.
Yeah.
So we don't coddle you. You know, we don't collar you. Trust me. You ask anybody that's taken my class, they'll tell you it's a ball buster. It's the longest freaking 20 to 30 minutes of your life. We will wear your ass and grind you. But it's because we want to see what your reaction is. But not only that, prior to that, we have set you up for success. So we take you, most of the people understand the military model, crawl, walk, run. Well, we do competence, confidence, mastery. So the competence is we make sure that you're competent in your skills. You're a fireman when you're in our class. We're pretty certain that you're competent. Now we start to work on the confidence, and we look for your weaknesses because we want to exploit them. We want you to walk away challenging a weakness to develop it into strength. So if your problem is mass confidence, if your problem is forcible entry, if your problem is advancing hose, so there's certain things, and the mind has a lot to do with it. So body positioning, breathing through it, what you're telling yourself, how to find your pace, which goes back to the maximum heart rate capacity and your heart rate. and the biometrics that we use and the things that we learned, we incorporate that into class. And that's where we tie it all together. And it's one of those things that you don't do once. You do it every day in different aspects of your life. It transcends the fire service, you know. You know, it's listen, man, I love teaching at conferences, and I love staying for the entire conference because, you know, I remind myself that nothing I say will teach me anything. If I'm going to learn anything, I got to listen. You know, and I wish that, you know, I wish that I would have caught on to that much earlier. And I take things for what they are. You know, most people don't understand the purpose for praying. I do. It's to remind me that I'm not in charge. And that's humility. And if you stay humble in the fire service, you will learn. You will learn. You will excel. You will become that man that you've always wanted to be, or that woman. You will be that high-speed, low-drag. But we all have limitations. You have to learn how to embrace those and work within them. There's no shame in that. There's no shame in failure. You don't get good unless you fail. Who's the home run king? The Sultan of SWAT. The Sultan of SWAT was the home run king. He was also the strikeout king. Come on, man. I mean, you know, even heavyweight boxers take their licks to get a chance at the championship. When you become a championship, you don't think that Meriwether took his share of ass beatings growing up?
No, I'm sure.
You don't think that, you know, people like Bruno didn't run across his problems as he was going up and to become a fire chief? He wasn't just freaking born one day and placed in that position and excelled. There's a series of failures that come with that. My life has been riddled with failures. But you keep going, man. There's nothing to hide. That whole thing that I told you from the very beginning, that I was willing to go to the grave, I was willing to kill myself rather than tell somebody about my fear that I was having anxiety issues. That is not the way that it should be done. I learned. I was very, very fortunate to survive that. I was riding a very close edge. And the only reason that the rage came up is because it's what kept you away from me. And as long as you stayed away from me, you could not discover my secret. My secret was I was scared. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to turn. I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know how to do any of that. And if you've got that problem, you call me. You call me, 561-239-1908. And I'll listen. And then I'll right-size you, I'll square you away, and I'll point you in the right direction. But we're in this together, man. We're in this together. You know, I sent out a tweet earlier this week. You got some crazy shit tweet. If you told me that I'd be saying shit like, yeah, I sent out a tweet 5 years ago, I'd have punched you in the throat, you know. So I sent out a tweet, and I said the difference between I and we is in illness and wellness. And that we're in this together. This is all about us. You know, and if we don't start opening up and really living a purposeful life and being honest about shit, suicides are going to continue.
Yeah.
The drunken disorderlies, the loss of careers, the killing people in drunk accidents, all that shit that we witness is going to continue within our own culture. We are who we've been waiting for. Wake the fuck up. You've been sleepwalking up till now. Wake up. We are who we've been waiting for.
Yeah, well, Rick, thanks. Probably one
my
of
pleasure,
the most
brother.
Impactful shows I've done. Yeah. This will be my I think I'm teaching FDIC on Friday, I think 10:30 in the morning. This will be my first year ever doing it, so
awesome.
I'm a little nervous, but
awesome. Oh, hey, one more plug while we're talking about FDIC. One more plug. There's a meeting, and it usually meets first thing in the morning, and I think in the afternoons too. It's called Friends of Bill W., and it's an AA meeting. So if you're out at FDIC and you don't drink and you happen to be one of these guys that's recovering and you need to hook up, you know where to find me. You look, it's in the program, Friends of Bill W. We meet in a certain room. We got food. We got coffee. We got a couple solid brothers there, man. Or as the way my brother Kamalu Kong, my Hawaiian brother, says, we got some solid Kanakas. Kanakas is men, Hawaiian for men, you know. And I mean, it's you know, and alcohol, let me explain something before people get the wrong idea. Alcohol's not the problem, man. You know, yeah, I'm a little pissed off that I can't drink anymore or smoke weed or any of that shit, you know, but that's never been the problem. It's what we do with it that's the problem. It's what we try to self-medicate, you know, and abuse shit. It's the same way abusing alcohol and drugs as it is children or women, you know. It's on us. It has nothing to do with the substance. To a point, there are some people that, you know, you add it to them and they turn into instant asshole. So, but hopefully a couple of black eyes and fat lips set them straight real quick, you know?
Rick, man, thanks for coming on. This has been great. I hope if anybody's listening, I'll put the links up on the show page. I know Ann very well, and I'd recommend her without question. I wish I would have known. We'll have to get you guys on. I'm going to have to talk to Ann. I'm going to have to get you guys on just to come on to the show to talk about the program.
Cool.
One day.
Yeah, she's freaking amazing, man. I've been trying to get her to come out to FDIC to actually do a class. And
sure.
You know, I think that the time is right, you know. And I want to plug a couple of other people. You know, Dan DeGrice from Chicago, man, he's doing incredible stuff with regards to this kind of thing. Dina Ali, another one, that's doing some very big stuff. You know, I got brothers on the West Coast, Travis Rask, you know, man, my boy, he's a soldier, man. He's a soldier, solid cat. And just guys that are just, they'll do anything, bro. They'll do anything to help you. And there's a movement out there, man. You know, you become a part of it, you know, because this is not about the substance. It's about the way we live in our lives. You know, we've got guys like my old department, like Larry Doling, you know, and oh, my God, one of my heroes, Dustin Hawkins. Dustin, if you should interview Dustin. That's a powerful story too. Dustin is a chaplain in Indian River County, I believe, in Florida. And he is, do you remember David Dangerfield? He posted on Facebook that PTSD is for real, an entire life of children dying and people being mutilated. And
yes.
This is too much. I'm out. And he posted that on Facebook and then killed himself. He was best friends with Dustin. And Dustin's story is very powerful because it comes from a different perspective. It's actually very, very impactful. There's actually a collaborative that Jeremy Hurd is the chaplain for Palm Beach County. Jeremy Hurd and Larry Doling and Dustin Hawkins are involved in making some legislative changes for mental health for firefighters in the state of Florida. And if and when that gets pulled off and goes, you know, Matt Wilhite is another one. He's a fireman that is one of the representatives in the House in Florida, and they're pushing for PTSD to be a part of a presumptive clause and for firemen. And this is the ground that's being broken in the state of Florida. And when it all comes together in Florida, you will have a blueprint for your state, and there will be a way to be able to make it happen. You know, just remember this, that, you know, even consider this rather, you know, even in large forest fires, it all starts with a small spark. We need more brothers to show up and start leading like true men, you know. But I've been dragging this shit on, man. So you want to end this thing, right? Because we could go
no,
on.
Whatever you would. I haven't even got nothing else to say.
I got a freaking pot of Cuban coffee here, man. I got a pot of Cuban coffee here. You know why meth never took off in Miami? Because Cuban coffee is stronger than crystal meth, okay? And that's why crystal meth never really took off in Miami.
I had Jeremy on. I did a wellness special back in November. I had a bunch of different guests. I had Jeremy on as a guest, and I told him, I said, you know, going around the country and speaking at departments and stuff at Palm Beach, if you want to know something about behavioral health programs and what they do for their guys and how they help their firefighters, Palm Beach County's pretty good.
Another guy is Jeff Dill.
Oh, Jeff, yeah.
Another guy is Jeff Dill. As a matter of fact, he'll be down here in Florida. He'll be in West Palm doing his lecture on firefighter behavioral health. Another solid Kanaka. He'll be down here, yeah. He'll be down here doing his class, you know.
Right.
And if you're in Canada, all you need to do is look up a brother named Dave Gillespie out of Peterborough, Canada. He's an operator in their fire department. He's part of tactical resiliency training. He's our international connection up there in Canada.
One of these days, we got to get something together that just basically lists everybody, almost like a white pages of on the internet where, you know, people can find. There's an idea.
That's a great idea.
The bottom line, guys out there won't help you right now. You know, there's really no excuse to put your hand out. There's guys out there willing to help.
This is true, but if we don't have shows like this to get the word out, I think that we're the minority. It's just that we're not scared to live out loud. We don't hide in the shadows. I don't hide in the shadows no more, you know. I ain't hid in the shadows in a long time. You know, I don't care what people think. The only thing that's important to me is what I think about myself, you know. But there are departments out there where guys are ostracized. People are put down.
Yeah.
They got no strength. They don't know about this stuff. If we don't have shows like this, they don't know, bro. They don't know. They just live their lives in quiet desperation the way that Thoreau quotes it. You know? And you know what? You don't have to have a fucking degree to get involved in this.
I noticed over the last, I like to think
we're
making a little bit of a turn. I mean, it's not there yet. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lot more to come down, like the legislation and stuff like that. But it's a lot different now, and it's being talked about a lot more than it was, say, 10 years ago.
Amen to that. You're right. You're right. 10 years ago, it was like that old quote. Yeah, I fell into some feelings one time. I got up and brushed that shit off. You know, that's the way we live. Oh, you're sore? Rub a little fucking dirt in it, you pussy. You know, that was the kind of shit that we had back then. That's what I grew up. That's what I grew up in the fire service with. You know, but that is.
Yeah, that's
I mean, when I got involved in the fire service, you had to have another job. You could not sustain yourself. We cut our own grass and bushes. Shit, I knew more about cutting grass and bushes from working in the fire service than I did when I worked on the lawn maintenance as a teenager. You know, fire service has changed a lot. Yes, there is. They're dinosaurs, throwbacks, part of our history, bro. You know.
Yeah. Rick, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure, brother.
Yeah, I'll put all your links up on the show. Thank you again. Anybody has any questions, I'll put his email up. Please feel free to email him. Say your phone number again too. If somebody wants to call you.
Yeah, phone number is 561, area code 561-239-1908.
All right, Rick, thanks. Have a good night. And I want to thank everybody for listening. If you need help, please reach out. There's people out there willing to help. There's other firefighters willing to help. All you got to do is just make a call. Have a good night.
Good night, boys.
Thanks for tuning into Fire Engineering Talk Radio.